You can't delegate digital transformation for your company. You and your executives have to own it. Executives need to engage, embrace, and adopt new ways of working with the latest in emerging technologies. And that's where we come in. Welcome to Embracing Change. The business world is changing at a faster pace than it ever has, and companies need to keep up. We interview the most interesting CEOs, CMOs, and other executives to talk about their challenges with digital transformation in their industry. This is Embracing Change, and this is your host, Gerardo Carrick.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Embracing Change. Today, my guest is Roy George, President and Managing Partner at More Lending. We're going to be talking today digital transformation in the mortgage industry. Hi, Roy. How are you?
I'm good, Gerardo. Thank you for having me on the show.
No, thank you. Thank you for making some time to talk to us. Roy, let's dive into it. Let's start by talking about a little bit about your background to the benefit of our audience. Tell us about yourself.
Sure. Sure. So I'm a mortgage industry veteran, I guess they call it these days. I've been in the business for over two decades and almost three. Have been on the servicing origination side of the industry, both sides, from banking to independent mortgage bankers, startups to well-established companies. And I've helped a lot of those companies through their change management or their transformation from a digital perspective, compliance perspective, and operational perspective.
Wow, and a lot has happened in the last 20 years, right?
A lot has happened in the last 20 years. We've seen a lot of companies come and go in the last two decades. We've seen some exponential growth in the early part of the previous decade, and then we saw, or in the 2000s actually, and then we saw even a greater expansion of the industry in the 2010 to 2020 period. All leading up to the COVID time period where things kind of slowed down a bit. But overall, we've seen a lot of changes from both an operational standpoint and a technological standpoint.
So, and I know you're connecting from Florida, right? You're connecting from Miami?
I'm connecting from Miami, yes. It from is Miami, yes. 80 degrees here.
Exactly. It's 80 degrees over there. We're about to, you know, to hit the, you know, single digits tomorrow here. It's going to be very, very cold. But the reason I was asking about that, we're based out of Atlanta, right? And Atlanta has become one of the centers for fintech around the country, right? There's so many fintech companies, you know, coming out of the Atlanta Tech Village and other places, right? And I know mortgage is, you know, the mortgage industry is at the heart of all of that, right? So I wonder if you can give us kind of like from your perspective, the kind of like what you've seen changing in the mortgage industry in the last 7-10 years that, you know, that that's really changed the way people are actually purchasing houses and getting loans, etc.
Sure. So you know, I've had the pleasure in the last 10 years to be part of a fintech organization, a banking institution, a home builder's finance arm, and to own and operate this company, which is a retail originator or a direct consumer originator. And so I've seen a lot of things happen over the course of this last 7-10 year period. Specifically, we've seen some interesting regulation come into play in the 2010, 2011, 2012 time period, which really forced a lot of companies to think about how they were doing business, how to put proper controls in place to keep that moving. And that's where a lot of the big push for technological advancement in our industry came from. And when that happened, everyone jumped into that world and started to create new technologies for all parts of the mortgage process. Now, some took effect or got a grasp in the industry a lot faster than others did. And I think we're still struggling with some of those parts of technological advancement, but we've seen the loan application go online. I mean, I don't think you're going to find many lenders out there. Almost 90% of lenders out there are using an online application now. Mm-hmm. And that wasn't the case when you look, you know, 15, 20 years ago, or even into the early part of the 2010, 2011, 2012 period. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the biggest changes that we saw from an origination standpoint. We also saw a lot of reg tech come into play. So this was regulatory technology to help mitigate the risk that these companies were taking or that they do take on a regular basis. And that technology was spread out across the industry, whether it was origination side, servicing side. It's applicable across the board, right? Because that loan life cycle starts with the customer looking for a home, buying a home, and it doesn't end when they finish the buying process. Now they've got somebody servicing that loan, a mortgage servicer, for, you know, an extended period of time. That could be a lifetime, you know, 30 years of a mortgage, or it could be, you know, 4 or 5 years until they refinance and they have a new lender and a new servicer. So I think some of the things that we have seen over these last 7 years are very interesting. I mentioned the loan application, but you're also seeing a lot of providers come into the space for processing services, underwriting services, closing services, and even delivery of the document as mm-hmm. a service. So you've got a lot of SaaS providers out there that are providing software as a service to companies like mine and other larger lenders. I'm a very small lender, but you see adoption of that technology or the attempt to adopt that technology throughout the last 10 years. And in some cases, very successfully, and in other cases, not as successfully. You've seen a lot of things that are used to reduce cost. The cost of originating a loan has gone up exponentially from, you know, the 2007-08 time period to now. And mm-hmm. the biggest increase was over the last decade or so because of all these new rules that have been put in place that you know, need a person to do a job that they may not have had to have done a decade before. Mm-hmm. New technologies being put in place. Now, even though long-term technology may cause a reduction in cost, the initial implementation costs and things like that may be too much for some companies to handle, or mm-hmm. A lot of companies don't dive in 100% because they don't have the capital to say, hey, let's digitize the entire process. They focus on different silos of the process and digitize those pieces. Some do it because of capitalization, others do it because of the risk factor. They're worried that if they digitize their entire process and move away from what they've been doing, that may be an adverse effect to them in originating new loans. And I'm going to speak mostly about the origination side. Mm-hmm. But it could be a adverse effect to them in originating new loans versus doing it one part at a time, where they feel, or leadership of a lot of companies feel, that they can let their employees acclimate to this new technology in an incremental basis.
So that's interesting, because you know, you and I talked about how this whole process or value chain has been unbundled, that right, and rebundled, and maybe you would do many of those pieces in a more comprehensive way with a large organization. Now, all of this new technology is providing a probably very specific services that have been unbundled or decoupled from, you know, from that process at a cheaper, faster, easier way, right?
Yeah. So, you know, when you think about the origination process, you do have silos, right? You have the loan application being taken by your salespeople or your loan originators. Mm-hmm. You have the collection of documentation or verification of documentation being done by the next phase or group of processors. They may be disclosing loans. They may be looking at initial documentation. Then you have people who are actually calculating whether these documents will satisfy the loan criteria or guidelines, and that's your mm-hmm. underwriting space. And then you still have to close that loan, deliver a package to a title company or an attorney somewhere, and then deliver that closed package of paper or digital package to a end investor, unless you're a direct lender, and then maybe you're holding that and servicing that. And that there are multiple ways on the back end of it as far as where that loan product ends up. Mm-hmm. But these siloed pieces are part of the process. You know, mm-hmm. I stated earlier that the application process has been adopted very well across the industry. That's a customer experience initiative, yeah. Right? You want the customer to have a really good initial experience. Mm-hmm. And naturally, you want them to have a great experience all the way through. Technology is available to help with processing, underwriting, closing. There are providers out there that do verification of employment, verification of income. There are providers out there that will calculate tax returns for you in minutes versus hours. Mm-hmm. There are providers of e-closings and e-vaults that help to deliver a digital document that is secure to an end buyer. Mm-hmm. All of these things are there. I have noticed over, you know, five different companies in the last, you know, 10, 15 years that the front end of the process is easy to implement. Salespeople are always looking for that next tool that will help them garner more sales. Mm-hmm. But I find often that the middle of the process gives the most pushback. And you start to see where processing has the ability to verify something digitally, but they're still following up with a phone call or something else that they may not need, makes them feel a little bit more safe, like mm-hmm. they did the extra step, so it's double verified. Same thing happens in the underwriting space. You have technology out there that's able to calculate tax returns and deliver a accurate income number, maybe 99.5% accurate, meaning that it's going to be correct, or at least correct enough to mm-hmm. complete the underwriting of a loan. At 99.5, you know, I don't think you're going to have any debt to income issues or any other issues that come up. But oftentimes you'll find that an underwriter doesn't trust the technology or is feeling maybe devalued because this technology is coming in and saying, hey, I can do what you do, and I can do what you do in 3 hours in 30 minutes.
Yeah.
So you get some pushback from people from that perspective. I think the next part or the next silo that is really going to just be a digital space will be the closing and delivery mm-hmm. of loan documents. You know, when you go to a closing, a lender can deliver an electronic package to a title company or an attorney. They can in turn have the borrower sign those documents electronically. So now you don't have to have a pen and paper. You don't have to go over it in that form. Mm-hmm. Notaries are able to visually see a driver's license through a camera, just like this interaction we're having, which is mm-hmm. you know, via webcam. They're able to do the same thing. So they don't have to physically hold a license to say this is right. They're able to notarize through e-notarization, yeah. and they're able to place those signed documents into what's called an e-vault, and then deliver those documents securely, meaning that no one else was able to access them and change them or do anything to them, to the end buyer. So I think, you know, the front end and the back end of the business has really, really embraced the digital transformation that these companies are trying to do within their organizations. And the fintech companies that are behind this digital transformation, even if they're SaaS providers and not, you know, not doing loans themselves, are highly successful on the front end and the back end. The middle of the process is where we're still seeing the biggest holdup. And mm-hmm. You know, I think there's a lot of work to be done there.
Of course. So let's talk about kind of like the biggest challenges in the industry, right? And I think we're touching upon one here, which is the cultural change, right? I assume, like in many other industries, cultural change is one of the big ones. But let's talk about kind of like the ones that you see as the biggest challenges, maybe we can talk a little bit more about cultural change and what else. You know, what...
So yeah, no, I think you hit the nail on the head. Cultural change is absolutely the number one driver of why things don't get accepted. Listen, when a vendor or a salesperson from a software service provider comes in and says, hey, we have this new technology that can do X, Y, and Z for you, which will reduce your overhead, increase your ROI, leadership at most companies are excited. They hear this and they say, this is what we want. We want to be able to provide a faster experience, a better product, and a more accurate delivery to whoever that loan's being delivered to. But the cultural shift in the employees and the line managers are where you have the biggest holdup. And so, you know, being an agent of change and being a manager who has been in a space where, you know, change was needed and not just something that we were trying to do, was needed in order to be able to move forward with these technologies in an efficient manner. I've noticed, and my experience has been, that it is more often that the employee does not want to immediately jump into saying, hey, this technology is right. And it's for a multitude of reasons, right? I mentioned being devalued before, but there's also the ramifications of devaluing somebody's work. One of them is, does this lead to me being laid off? Mm-hmm. And that's a scary thing for a lot of people. And in this environment today, you know, where we're seeing market contraction, it's a big concern for people.
Yeah.
Another thing, when you look at, you know, adopting technology and bringing it in, average age in my industry, in the mortgage industry in general, is higher than a lot of other industries.
Yeah.
And so you may have very experienced people doing their jobs who may not be as apt to understand the technology, learn how to use the technology, and use it to their advantage. That's
or the opposite, right? That you don't need that experience anymore because now there's a piece of technology that can do that, and you know, without having the experience, right?
You are absolutely right, and that's why it's so important that the cultural change be managed properly, right? We need to be able to reposition people, repurpose them into job functions that allow them to use their skill set, but still take advantage of the technology. We also have to move away from the mindset that you have to work 19 hours a day to do the best job. Rather, use the technology to work 8 hours a day and go home and spend some time with your family, or go home and do something else, or don't go home and do something else. But you know, you have to be able to have the leadership in place to say, this is why we're doing this. This is the benefit to why we're doing this for you. And then only will the leadership of these companies see the ROI benefit that trails along with that. Because yes, a salesperson is going to pitch you on the immediate return, but because there's pushback from adoption, you're not going to see that immediate return. Not always. There are some technologies out there where you will see an instant return, but you know, again, it's
and we see very similar behavior with other technologies across other industries as well. So just to talk about, let's say, the adoption of a CRM, right? A company might want to adopt a sophisticated CRM to be able to have a better tracking of their deals, of their sales performance, of their pipelines, etc., right? But the one thing is to have the technology and pay for the license, and the other thing is to have the employees and the salespeople actually using that technology and uploading that technology and putting the deals on the technology and tracking everything there. So it requires not only the technology, it requires the buy-in from people and also the workflows, right? You have to change that almost psychological contract of how we do things here, right? You know, this is the way we're going to be doing it now. And the number of clients that we've seen that they have adopted a new technology but has failed because internally they haven't they haven't committed to the process, it's high.
Yes, you're absolutely right. And Salesforce is a good example, right?
Yeah, I didn't want to mention Salesforce, but yes, exactly.
We've seen that with any CRM, for that matter.
We've seen it with HubSpot, with everyone.
Yeah, you know, when in the front end of the process, you have people that will adopt quickly. But again, it goes back to the message and how that message is delivered. Sure, from a business's perspective, you are going to get you know, better tracking, reporting, and other things that you need to run your business. But it's imperative to make the message clear to the salespeople that you can now utilize this for drip campaigns and to stay top of mind to your client base, and that it can automatically work, freeing up your time to get more customers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I think that front end of the process piece is a great example where the growing pains have already happened, the adoption has already occurred, and there are lessons to be learned there that I just do not see the industry applying in the middle pieces of the process. And that might be a risk concern too, right? A lot of people are concerned about how does the company, how does the risk to the company become greater if we rely on technology too much? I think it's imperative that when you're rolling out new technology, especially if you're developing that technology, that you work hand in hand with regulators who will be able to say, hey, these are the things we see, and these are the adjustments we think you should make so that it can be rolled out properly. This will help companies to show, or companies to see, that there is a diminished risk, and rolling out a piece of technology will be beneficial even in the middle spaces of processing and underwriting alone. And that message also needs to be delivered to the employees that are processing loans or underwriting loans.
Yeah,
you know, we saw it happen 2 and 3 decades ago with offshoring certain things. So, you know, it's a very similar situation where people feel, hey, I'm losing my job, but you're not. You're actually gaining some time back in your life. And, you know, honestly, at the end of the day, you might become a more valuable asset to the company because you don't have overtime. You're still closing as many loans as you were before. And you don't cost anything additional versus someone who's not embracing that technology, needs a lot more time, is utilizing overtime, is getting paid overtime, and is actually increasing the cost to the organization. So, you know, those messages being delivered properly from the right managers that are, you know, there with the troops working on a daily basis is so important.
Yeah.
Leadership can always be excited about ROI and the bells and whistles that come with all these new technologies, but they have to make the line managers, the middle managers, and the employees believe that this is a benefit to them by showing them that the benefit is real.
Yeah. And you know, you don't know what you don't know, right? Sometimes you adopt these technologies and you realize that you have to fix certain areas of your process, right? I can think of an example of a financial services company that we had as a client a few years ago, that it was starting to generate the leads in the insurance world, right? Leads online, right? And in the past, they always generated leads in personal events, right? In luncheons and seminars, etc. So when we started working with them and generating leads for them online, the way they were processing those leads was similar to a lead that came from a lunch and learn, right? So they would send it to the, you know, to the executive, and the executive would call them and try to set up a meeting to analyze their financial situation, etc., right? And the conversion was very, very bad because they did not adapt that process to the digital channel. Meaning, a lot of the leads that were coming through digital were less; they were higher in the funnel in conversion, right? It's not the same going to a lunch and learn and listening to a presentation on how to plan for retirement, right? And then thinking about, do I want to, you know, should I buy insurance or should I buy annuities or should I buy different products, versus coming in through a digital ad, filling in a form and wanting to talk to somebody. You are way higher in the process, right? And what we discover there is that, okay, if you want to start scaling up your business through digital advertising, then we have to figure out also how the rest of your funnel is going to look like for this channel, right? Because you cannot try to address these leads with the same processes that you have for your other channels, right? But you don't know until you go through it and prototype it and realize that's actually an issue.
You're right. You're absolutely right. You in most cases will not know what's going to happen until you apply it practically. I always like to adjust my tech stack as, you know, we find different things that occur. One of the biggest things that I've ever focused on as far as technology is actually managing the individual vendors that provide these technologies. If we find that the technology is not what we thought it was going to be or did not deliver what we were sold, then it's time to figure out how to move away from that provider and get with someone else who can do what we want to do. Or in our case, you know, we are developing some of our own technology. So we do that for the purposes of, you know, taking care of our business process flow versus having to fit into the box of what's available. And so, yeah, you're absolutely right. You don't know what you don't know until you've actually been able to go through it and apply it and then get practical knowledge feedback from your team and look at the reports and say, hey, this data shows that this is working or this isn't working. And where do we need to make adjustments to continue to create the environment that works best for us?
Absolutely. And Roy, do you see the same challenges for all organizations across the mortgage industry, regardless of size?
Yeah. You know, regardless of size, regardless of whether you're a banking institution or an independent mortgage bank or a broker or a hybrid like my company is, you're going to run into those same challenges across the board. The average age of the industry doesn't change no matter where you go, right? It's the same people working in all of those companies. And it's the same items that we spoke about earlier, where some are able to easily adapt to the technology and some are not. The practical use of that technology is deployed, and then only after a contract period do you get the chance to move away from that technology, finding out that you've used it for a year and it did not deliver what you thought it was going to deliver. So a lot of the time, it doesn't matter the size of the organization. Now, there are some organizations out there, and I used to work for one a long time ago, where we developed all of our own technology. And so we didn't have to rely on anything outside of the company. So we wanted to make an adjustment. It was, you know, hire more development team, hire more coders, and get that adjustment made or outsource that that functionality to a technology company somewhere so that they can actually help us get there quickly. And that's what we did. We outsourced to a technology company outside that helped us to develop our internal technologies and get them to the right place. So, you know, very few times throughout my career have I seen that the size of an individual company will lessen the experience or lessen the blow of these technologies that are available being useful or not useful.
Okay. And what other challenges are you seeing out there? So we talked about the cultural change. You talked about the technology, the tech stack, how you need to be adopting all of that tech stack. You know, what else?
So I think from a technology standpoint, yes, we have the adoption issue, which is a big challenge. We have the actual technology's use being an issue. I think another challenge that a lot of people run into in our industry is there are multiple providers for each function, right? And you know, it goes back to that you don't know until you, you don't know what you don't know. It's who's the best provider. Everybody says they can do all the same things, or somebody says they can do it better, but you know, that's very hard to determine. And unless you're going through a long period of testing to figure out exactly who is providing the best possible service, that could be a costly endeavor for an organization. And so I think that's another challenge that's out there that companies are facing, that they need to really take some time to understand. You know, there is the option to go with what looks good on paper at the moment and then, you know, wait it out and move over to something else. Also, another challenge that goes hand in hand with that is somebody else may come along right at the time where you're deploying new technology with even better technology, right? So the speed of change on the technology side is a challenge in itself.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Roy, is there a deeply held belief in your industry that people fundamentally misunderstand?
Sure, sure. You know, I think one of the biggest beliefs that you know that may be misunderstood is, you know, can a machine actually tell me if a person is credit worthy? Or you know, there's that thought process that no, a machine by itself cannot tell me that. I need to be able to look at it. But you know, you have your government agencies who issue automated underwriting responses and give you conditions based on just the information being fed into the machine. So you know, that I think a lot of people see that kind of a thing. You know, I think you may also see that people may not want to use technology. I don't think that's the case. I think, you know, people think home buyer and they think older adult, and they don't realize that home buyers are in their, you know, 30s, early 40s. That's the largest grouping of home buyers right now. And they like technology. They're okay with doing it on their phone, or, you know, on the go, or completing a loan application while they're in a car ride, you know. So things that we may not have thought about 20 years ago, no, I have to get to an office, I want to sit down with somebody, I want to write it in. Those deeply held beliefs that are maybe something that you grew up in this industry thinking are no longer the social norm. I think that's a big thing that this industry has a challenge with.
It's interesting you mentioned that. Yesterday I was talking to somebody in the hospitality business, and he was telling me about how things have changed in the hospitality business, right? And how they're having to adapt to these younger generations that are starting to use hotels, right? And the fact that these people, they don't want to talk over the phone. They don't want to call the reception. They want to text the reception, right? Because this is the generation that grew up with mobile phones and not picking up the phone and not actually sending emails either. You know, the text messaging is their a preferred method for communication. So how important, he was telling me about how important it's been for the hospitality industry to develop these systems and these bots that allow to communicate with this new generation of guests in a way that they want to be communicated at, right? So I think if I take that learning and I think about that generation applying for a loan, they might not want to receive an email with a form, right? They might want to text it back. They might not want to receive the phone call from the loan officer, right? They might want to have a chat conversation beforehand. You know, all of those things have to be taken into account, right? When you think about the customer experience.
I agree with you 100%. That is definitely the case in this industry, and I'm sure it's the case in many other industries. More and more people are okay with just being able to do it on their phone, laptop, iPad, you know, Galaxy, whatever you're using. They're able to do that on the go. I think another deeply held belief in my industry is that, you know, there is a scare of delivering personal information via an electronic format, right? So I don't want to email something. I need a secure portal. But the notion is, oh, if I'm delivering that through a computer, then somebody could hack that. More often than not, most of the technology out there is very secure in protecting your information. They provide a great way for you to get one set of information to another company so that they can use that information. It's like taking your banking information and providing it to a mortgage company. You can do that without actually printing anything out, without going to the bank, without logging into your own bank account. Mm-hmm. You simply will utilize a software that will allow you to put your credentials in and will immediately verify your information. And that's one step you don't have to do. But there is a belief in the industry, whether you're talking about from a customer perspective or from some of the people who have been in the industry as long as I have, that that could cause their information to, you know, be shared or be lost. Yeah. And yes, it is unfortunate that those things do happen, but it is not the norm.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So, we're almost closing down to the podcast. I'd love to talk to you about what you see, what to expect, what the trends, what to expect for the next couple of years in this industry.
So, you know, in my industry, I think from a digital transformation perspective, mm-hmm. we have done the majority of what we can do for transformation purposes. Sure, there are things that are going to come up, will allow us to do new things. But with what's out there right now, I think a lot of the industry has done what they can. From a fintech perspective, there will be new companies that come up offering a new, some new technology that's going to help to drive digital transformation even further. So I think those two things will marry. Digital transformation and fintech companies will be a hand-in-hand thing. It won't be two separate thought processes. And I think, you know, I mentioned this very early in this interview, which was you need to be able to dive in and apply the available technology to your company right away so they can be utilized. Mm-hmm. In the future, I can see these silos like processing and underwriting being more focused on, because again, they're two of the most expensive parts of the process. And if you can figure out how to, you know, lower that cost using technology or whatever other things you may be using to get there, I think that's going to be the future focus of this industry. Mm-hmm. I think there are plenty of online application providers. I think there's plenty of income verification. There's plenty of ways to document different things like bank statements and tax returns. I think that delivering electronic documents has already had a surge. So it's really going to be about how do you get the adoption from the middle of the process. I think that the future is going to be ripe for people like myself who are really good at getting the people to, you know, accept the technology, to utilize that technology, being able to explain that technology and the benefit they see. That's where the future of getting more return will come from. I don't mm-hmm. think that the future of this industry is going to be in additional technologies. It's okay. going to be in the correct utilization of the mm-hmm. existing technologies.
Excellent. Roy, thank you so much for your, you know, for your time and for your insight. If anybody from the audience is interested in reaching out to you and learning more about what you guys do and connecting with you, how can they do that?
Yeah, absolutely. If anybody wants to get in touch with me, they can always look me up at www.morelending.com. Or they can email me directly at roy@morelending.com. I never, just delete anything. I try to respond to anyone who's reaching out. It's one of the things I think everyone should be able to do is be able to return an email or a call. So, yeah, that information is available on the web, and you can get in touch with me at any time.
Excellent. Thank you so much for your time, Roy. And thanks, everyone. See you in the next episode.
Thanks a lot, Gerardo. Bye.